You are Locked On Grizzlies, your daily Memphis Grizzlies podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome into the Locked On Grizzlies show. As always, I'm your host, Mark King, for this show. Got a great show for you guys today on this Wednesday episode of Locked On Grizzlies. Joe Mullenix, site manager of Grizzly Bear Blues, joins me this today, and we honestly would only plan on doing a segment for this show every single week. Tonight we kind of got sidetracked and we recorded much longer than we normally do. We both got very angry and very frustrated and kind of went in on JB. So it just things that I think we all probably think about, with things we all probably talk about with our friends, and just the job that JB is doing and how we're very unhappy with it. Just some specific things that we noticed that should be changed, and but there's also some other things in this conversation. So just that's going to be the episode today. Just going to be Joe Mullenix and myself having a conversation. It's a long conversation, so it won't be, that'll be the only thing we have on the show. So I hope you guys enjoyed. Again, make sure you're following the show on Twitter at Locked On Grizz. Make sure you're following me on Twitter at King_Producer. If you have any questions for the show for Monday Mailbag coming up next week, or if you just have questions in general, if they're time sensitive, I'll answer them in another podcast. Maybe not on Monday, but if they're time sensitive, I'll answer them right away. You can email those to me at lockedongrizz@gmail.com. So get your questions in coming through the week for next week's Monday Mailbag again, or if they're time sensitive, I'll go ahead and answer them right away. Enjoy the conversation with Joe, and we will see you guys on Thursday. We will have Jason Smith of 92.9 ESPN of the Jason and John Show joining me on Thursday, tomorrow's show. So stay tuned for that as well. Welcome to the show, as always, this segment every week. Joe Mullenix, site manager of Grizzly Bear Blues. Make sure you follow him on Twitter at Joe Mullenix. What's going on, man?
I'm doing well, buddy. As well as I can be doing. We were just talking before we started recording. Both Locked On and GBB having good months. But the reason for that is that the team that we cover is a dumpster fire. So it's unfortunate to see what's happening to the Grizzlies. And then, of course, you know, the season, you could argue, is already dead. But if it wasn't dead already, the Denver Nuggets killed it in the second half of the game on Monday night. Just a tough stretch there. At least Jaren Jackson Jr. is going to the Rising Stars Challenge. That's nice. The Grizzlies having another young player represented in that annual display of the future of the NBA, in theory. So that's a ray of sunshine in an otherwise dreary existence that Grizzlies fans have. You know, the Indiana game was a nice little bright light, and then it was put out pretty quickly by Denver in that second half.
Yeah, this team, as I mentioned at the end of my show, this Tuesday show, as we record this Tuesday night for tomorrow's show, but the end of my show, I just said that there is never a dull moment with this team, and it's true. I mean, every time you think we get into kind of a groove, even when you were in a groove of the losing streak, and you know, it's kind of fun, it's hard to find stuff to talk about or write about or whatever, something else happens. And yeah, last night was no different. The Grizzlies started out great, and then they just, it just fell apart. I mean, I don't understand, and maybe you can help me, but how do you, I attribute it, most of it, to coaching. I mean, I don't know how you can come out, get a game, and continue to not make the adjustments, let other team make the adjustments, and just fall apart. I mean, it's just what it is. I mean, the Grizzlies just fell apart.
It's coaching. I think that's 100% it. I think that you can go into a game with a good initial game plan, and to credit JB and the coaching staff, they obviously do that somewhat consistently. It's not like they get the brakes beat off of them in most first halves, unless the team is that much better than them talent-wise, you know, a Golden State or somebody like that. So I think that they do a good job scouting and preparing for an opponent, but I don't see very many counterpunches. You know, when a coaching staff, Mike Malone's a good example, he's a good coach. He got the shaft with the Sacramento Kings. I'm glad he landed in Denver. He's a damn good basketball coach. If you're not going to be able to land counterpunches to whatever he does to counter what you're doing, you're going to get run off the gym, especially when you're going against a team that is that much physically better than you. Like, the Denver Nuggets have more talent than the Grizzlies. No one would dispute that. the Nuggets'
a lot more
fifth
talent.
Best player, the Nuggets' yeah. fifth best player would be at worst the third best player on the Grizzlies, whether it's Will Barton or whoever you want to debate what that player would be. It would clearly be the third best player on the Grizzlies, given that Jaren is so young and Kyle is limited in terms of what he can do as a scorer. You know, if you put Will Barton on the Grizzlies, he changes the game for Memphis. And he's, what, their fifth or sixth best player when everybody's healthy.
Yep.
So
yep.
Denver is clearly that much more talented, but you have to be able to have the coaching chops to counter the whatever the adjustment is of your opponent. And time again, Bickerstaff's not able to do that. And that is shown in the way that these second halves go for the Grizzlies. It wasn't necessarily the third quarter in particular against the Nuggets, but whether it's the third quarter, the fourth quarter, the second half as a whole, a lot of that is how you adjust and how you plan for the adjustments of your opponent. On a much smaller scale, for your listeners who don't know, I'm a high school football coach. When I'm talking to my coaches at halftime, the first thing I say is, what are they going to do to us? Well, what are they going to do that they're going to counter what our initial thing was, and how do we prepare for that? That's the first question I ask. I am not sure that a professional coach, a basketball coach, asks that question. I think that he goes into it, he has a plan, he tries to stick with it for a full 48, and that's just not going to get the job done. Or if he does have a counter and he's trying to get this thing rolling in terms of second half adjustments, he's not able to implement them. He's not able to get his players to buy into it. I'm not sure which one is worse.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting. I was on the way home last night, and I was listening to Kerry Darby and John Roser on the radio, and they played audio from the visiting locker room, which I never go in because I just never had the time.
Right.
And they had Mike Malone, and the first thing he said in his availability, or the first thing they said in that question they played was, I came in here and I told him we have to make adjustments because what we're doing isn't working. You know, we came out and we came out flat. We didn't play. That was like the first thing he said. And it feels like that never happens, whether it's waiting too long to take players out that are not playing well, or waiting too long to make the adjustment, or just, like you said, not making the adjustment at all, whether that's the players not responding to him. And as largely he's been billed as the player's coach, I'd be, you know, that seems surprising that they just don't respond, or whatever sure. that is. It's not getting from game plan to execution, especially in the second half. I mean, I largely think that there isn't a number of losses that gets them fired, but do you think is there a number that eventually they're like, all right, we got to just change it now? I think to their fault, they have to just go into the summer and just deal with it then.
I think you're right. I would like to see J.B. Bickerstaff let go. You don't want to openly say, I hope someone gets fired. That's not something that I want to hang my hat on as someone who covers this team. But at the same time, he'd still get his money. You know what I mean? He signed right. a contract. Him getting fired doesn't mean he doesn't get paid. So that makes me feel a little bit better about advocating for it. But I agree with you. I don't necessarily see it happening in season. I think it should. I'd rather see Jerry Stackhouse as the interim coach and see what he can do, knowing the record that he had with Raptors 905 in the G League. I'd like to see what he can do and then put him through an actual interview process, which I hate to bring that back up. But damn it, I said, why can't we have an interview process? Why is this complicated? Why is this guy who has shown no tangible evidence of being a good head NBA basketball coach being yep. handed this job? It made no sense then. It makes no sense now. I don't give a crap if Marc Gasol and Mike Conley like him, because Marc Gasol and Mike Conley might not be on this team in a week. The next time I'm on your show, Mark, your terrific podcast, Locked On Grizzlies, I may be talking about a team that does not have Marc Gasol and Mike Conley. The two main reasons that this dude's got a job. Period.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Absolutely right. I said it in the summer. I got killed for it too, just like you did. I got killed for saying that there's no evidence that JB's a good coach. I mean, there's
zero evidence. None.
I mean, it is the interim coaches he's had was they both interim since he's had one with Houston with James Harden on the roster wasn't very good.
And I stand by what I said, sorry to cut you off, over the summer. I said, Mark, I don't mind him being the front runner. If you want right. to have a process where you do interviews, most interim coaches are front runners because that's the guy that you had in place that you've seen actually do the work. So I didn't even mind him being the front runner. But why in the world There's only 30 NBA head coaching jobs in the entire world. The highest level, yep. the highest caliber of athlete in the world. To coach those players, there's only 30 of those jobs. You're trying to tell me that some college coach, I mean, some dude from Iowa State or UVA, or you're trying to tell me that some assistant in San Antonio or Boston or in Philly, that they wouldn't take the Grizzlies job because it's in Memphis? Get out of here,
least,
man.
They, at least
doesn't
they
matter where that freaking job is. Look at the Memphis Tigers with football. You can have coaches leave eventually for a better job, but they still use that as a launching point for their careers. It's an
Absolutely.
Opportunity for them to be on a bigger stage and show what they can do. There's no reason the Grizzlies can't be that for the NBA. I'm not saying you're going to get a Greg Popovich and hold on to him for 20, 30 years, but there's no reason that you can't find a good NBA head coach, a young person who embraces analytics, who understands how these things work, and can grow in the job. And then once they get to a big enough level in Boston or Philly or New York or some job like that comes open, then they leave and you find somebody else. My biggest issue, and I stand by it, J.B. Bickerstaff was never subjected to a full interview process. They did not bring in actual candidates for this job. He was handed something that never should have been handed to him, and that is my issue. If he's the best candidate after a long process, go with God. He's your guy. But to say he's your man without really doing due diligence beyond a couple of phone calls, that's complete crap to me. I think in an off season where they did pretty well as a front office, that was their biggest mistake.
Well, even to your point, I mean, you think that all those guys would even want to just come for an interview? You're saying that the Grizzlies right. are so bad that none of those guys are like, nah, I don't even want to interview, bro. I'm good here. It's just bullshit. It's not true. And you're right. They had and we talked about this today in our Grizzly Bear Blues Slack channel. Mm-hmm. They had a good offseason. Like I'd still like look back at it and like actually I call that a win. Like they did good with the resources they had, with the things that they had available to them. I thought they did good, but you're right.
The idea that Mark and Mike equal the playoffs, which
correct.
As we talked about ad nauseum, and I talked about it with Gary Parrish, and you talked about it elsewhere, that idea is no longer true. But this time last year, that was still a universal truth that 99% of Memphis people that follow and cover this team accepted. So a healthy Mark and a healthy Mike equals the playoffs. Going into last summer, if that is how you believe, which almost everybody did, they had a very good offseason, a very good offseason. They built the team around those two guys. Now, obviously, the game has changed. But in terms of personnel moves, I agree with you. They had a good offseason, and I think it would be revisionist history to say that they didn't. Their biggest mistake was not doing an actual interview process and meeting with people and picking brains and trying to see if there's another candidate who'd be interested in this job. They, like I said, I've heard they made a couple of calls. I know Jeff Calkins has talked about that. They did a couple of things here and there, but there was no serious elongated process. And here we are. You have a guy that is not up to the challenge of bringing this team along. And the person that he holds the most accountable, we talk about accountability a lot, the person he holds the most accountable is the one who should have the longest leash, Jaren Jackson Jr., who's named yes. to the Rising Stars Challenge. I'll have to look up the numbers. I'd be willing to bet the last time I did research it, he was ninth in the NBA among all rookies in minutes. Ninth. He was ninth. He should be in the top five. This shouldn't even be a question. I don't understand why this is something that even has to be discussed. But he commits yeah. two quick fouls. Get him out. Yank. But Shelvin Mack throws two turnovers in three possessions. He stays out there. Javon Carter doesn't get a single minute. But damn it, we're going to ride with Shelvin Mack. He's going to be the hill I'm going to die on. Shelvin Mack Hill is where J.B. Bickerstaff is going to plant his flag. It's absurd. I have lost all patience with that mindset.
It absolutely it's crazy. You're right. There's no reason. Let Jaren play. If you're losing
let
so
him
much
play.
Now at a rate.
Let him
who
foul out.
Cares. There's no reason you have in about 30 a night. A night. I don't care what, I mean, don't care any of the circumstances are. I don't care if you're winning. I don't care if you're losing. I don't care if he has three fouls. Put him in until he fouls out or he balls out. One or the other. Just leave him in the game. I don't understand it. I don't get it. And I think everybody as well as us will continue to be frustrated about it.
But back to last night, Kyle Anderson started in the game back from eight games that he was out from the ankle injury. But that last possession, man, I love Kyle Anderson, but he did not want to shoot that ball last night. He wanted to do everything but shoot that ball. And to his credit, he got a couple of rebounds. That was just the most bizarre possession I've seen in a long, long time. I watched it, you know, 9 or 10 times now. I don't understand why Mike didn't come get the ball. I don't understand why he didn't finish a drive. There's just so much about that possession that was so strange to me after watching it still a bunch of times.
Kyle Anderson is another example, going back to J.B. Bickerstaff. He still doesn't use Kyle Anderson right. To JB's credit, he's used him more as a point forward, which is, and I think I quote tweeted you on this, who could have possibly foreseen the idea of Kyle Anderson being better as a point forward than as a true small forward? Who could have possibly called that? Oh, yeah, that's right. Everybody. Literally everybody who follows basketball and knows who Kyle Anderson
Kyle
is.
Kyle literally said it in his opening press conference. Kyle said, I'm a distributor. He said it. Kyle said,
but that's not how he was used to start the season. It's unbelievable. But anyway, credit JB. Finally, Kyle Anderson's getting to do that more, and lo and behold, the team plays better when Kyle Anderson's able to do that. He had a terrible possession. I agree with that completely. But he should have been a screener. I think Matt Hardlicka talked about that, and I agree completely. Matt just got to it first. He's exactly right. He should have been a screener. He should have been somebody in that job who is going towards the basket. He shouldn't have to be standing at the elbow or at the top of the key trying to make a decision in that moment. He should not be that guy. That should be the guy that you're paying $25 or $30 million to. That should be Marc Gasol. That should be Mike Conley. Like you said, Conley doesn't come back to the ball. Where is Gasol in that situation? You have Kyle Anderson essentially on an island, and that's not the strength of his game. His strength is when he's on the move, going to the side, finding somebody off of a pick or off of a screen, a backdoor screen. That's where he thrives. And in that stand-up moment, he was put in a position to not be successful. And that's what coaching is, Mark. That's what coaching is. Regardless, I don't give a damn if it's peewee, high school, professionals, college, whatever. Coaching is putting your personnel in the best position to be successful. And while Kyle Anderson probably could have done better in that possession, and it'll be a learning experience for him, and that players play, you have to keep that perspective to an extent. I don't think Kyle Anderson should have been in that spot. If that's the way that it was drawn up, which maybe it wasn't, if that's the way it was drawn up, or it was the way,
I asked JB about it. I asked Mike about it specifically about that play. They both said that's how they were looking to get that play. That's what they were looking to get.
He's come up in basketball. His dad obviously had a great career, and JB is obviously a, as you mentioned, a player's coach, and he knows more about basketball than I ever will. But I know what Kyle Anderson can do well, and apparently JB Bickerstaff doesn't. And if you don't agree with that, I can just put on, you know, however many games they've played now, 48, 49, 50 games of tape, and show that consistently Kyle Anderson is not used properly. And I think that possession is another example of that.
What even goes – actually, let's do this. Let's take a real quick break, and then we'll come back and keep talking. Stick with us through the break.
For those of you who don't know what to do for a real job, like to actually make money, I know I cover the Grizzlies for grizzlybearblues.com. I write about them. I do this show every single day, and I love all that. That's not what actually I make money from. I'm actually a videographer, and I own a company called 85 Creative. We do all types of video work, from weddings to special events to commercial work to video marketing to small business productions to social media content. Literally everything you can think of that contains a video, we've done those type of videos. So if you need a video for your small business, if you know someone's getting married, needs a wedding cinematographer, anybody that needs video work at all, let us know. We can do a video for you. 85creative.com. That's 85 Creative, all one word, all lowercase, just spell out 85, 85creative.com. Go to there, check out all the work that we've done. Let us know what you like. Let us know what you don't like. We can make a video for you. Just get in touch with me.
Welcome back to the show. Joe Mullenix, site manager of Grizzly Bear Blues, joining me. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. But I had to sneak a break in there because we've already talked for a little bit of time, and that's fine, but we'll just keep talking. Continue what we were talking about before, not using Kyle properly, he doesn't even use Justin properly. Holiday, I mean, if you think about it, he's had that kid for weeks now and is just now getting to where Justin's getting corner threes. I mean, Justin Holiday has literally never moved from outside the corner and get the ball and shoot the ball when he's open. That's all he needs to do. He doesn't need to be dribbling, doesn't need to be driving. He gets it tremendously worse when he dribbles the ball. And it's just amazing how you, me, everybody else who writes about this team, the people I talk to at the game, like every other media person can see it, but a coaching staff cannot. Whether that's like just potentially like just we're blind because we don't care, or just, I just don't understand how everybody else can see it, but you can't see how you don't use Justin Holiday properly, how you don't use Kyle Anderson properly.
It really doesn't make any sense. It's hard to defend. And like I said, I'm done. I was never really in the business of defending J.B. Bickerstaff, but I'm certainly not going to, whether it's Kyle, Jaren, or obviously now it's with Justin. Justin Holiday, he is a player who can play passing lanes well, gives good effort defensively, can play well in the corner, has the dribbling capacity to be able to pump fake, maybe get a couple of dribbles, either get to the basket on a couple of steps or pull up for a mid-range jumper. That's his game in a nutshell. I don't understand why that can't be seen by a coaching staff. So again, it's one of two things. Either it is seen by the coaching staff, which you would hopefully give professionals who make six or seven figures in terms of salary, give them the benefit of the doubt that they know this already, and either they don't care and they're trying something different with him other than the hundreds of NBA games that he's already played, showing what he's capable of and what his strengths are, or they are incapable of getting the players to execute the scheme, which, as we mentioned in the previous segment, that wouldn't make a ton of sense because part of the reason J.B. Bickerstaff is in the role that he's in is because he's supposedly a player's coach. So either way, it's a bad answer, you know, and it is indicative of the poor level of coaching that you see on a night-in, night-out basis when it comes to the Memphis Grizzlies. It's players not being utilized properly. It's inconsistent rotations. You know, basketball, in all sports, obviously, players are usually creatures of habit. But when you have rotations in basketball, it's like shift work in hockey, where it's like formation alignments in football. You get used to your role. Everybody has a role. And to be fair to the Grizzlies coaching staff, the roles have been blown up a little bit because Chandler Parsons isn't there, and obviously injuries have hurt them a little bit. But Garrett Temple's a great example of that. You know, people say they're not sure if Garrett Temple has trade value. You put a Garrett Temple on the Philadelphia 76ers as a ninth or tenth man or on the Portland Trailblazers, that team is instantly better. Yes. I think that they have been misusing him, and in fairness, because they don't really have anybody else. But anyway, going back to Justin, similar concept. You know, they don't really have anybody else. Bruno has looked good, but he's also a 10-day guy that you're not sure if he's part of your long-term plans. Justin, they gave up so much for him. The front office, you would figure, wants him in the long-term plans. They must like his game enough, you know, whether you think 2 second-round picks is a lot or not. I think it's a decent enough haul to at least make a educated guess that the front office is interested in keeping Justin Holiday long-term. And this coaching staff has done nothing to show, except for maybe the past game or two, that they know how to use the guy. And that's really frustrating. You'd think that you'd be a little bit more familiar with the skill set of a player than they apparently are.
Yeah, it is continuing to be the most frustrating things that I see, as well as yourself, as well as everybody else sees on a nightly basis. You mentioned Bruno, though. I'm largely in the camp of just giving a veterans minimum for the rest of the year. Maybe the Marshawn deal where they sign him up for this year and the next year at minimum. Doesn't cost you much. He is on a 10-day, like you mentioned. It does make a little bit of weird. I think you could sign him and do another 10-day, and that will get him through the trade deadline. To kind of get things worked out, if you need to get things worked out with the luxury tax and the roster spots and all that jazz. But thoughts on just go ahead and get them a deal through the year, maybe through next year, see what you get.
I'd do the second 10-day first. I don't think there's necessarily a rush to get him on the spot in Memphis. I don't want them to make the same mistake that they made with Marshawn Brooks. Now, I will say the Marshawn Brooks deal was dumb to begin with. Here's a guy who was scoring a bunch of garbage buckets on a really bad Grizzlies team. Not to say that this year's team is that much better, but at least the Grizzlies were trying to be bad last year. You know, Dylan Brooks especially towards the end when Mark was in and out of the lineup. You know, Dylan Brooks was your best night in, night out player. Anytime that's the case, you're going to be really bad. So Marjon Brooks putting up the points he did, coming from China after multiple years out of the NBA, that was a strictly reactionary move that wasn't really rooted in logic. Looking at Bruno, at least there's a logical argument to be made for offering him a similar contract eventually. You know, the 7'7 wingspan, the athletic frame, the work ethic that he's displayed. Now he's kind of on a job interview, going back to the picker step stuff. The 10-day contract is essentially a job interview in and of itself, just an extended one. So maybe he's doing that a little bit more than he normally would. But let's give him the benefit of the doubt. He's been in the G League for a couple of years. He understands that he needs to work in his game in order to stick in the NBA. He's 22 years old. He's an athletic freak. He has a ton of God-given talent. He would make more sense to take a flyer on and see what you got than a Marjon Brooks. So I still would be patient. I like the second 10-day idea, getting through the trade deadline, like you just mentioned, and seeing where you're at salary cap-wise and luxury tax. Maybe you can even extend him beyond a year if you really think he could grow into something. I'd be fine with that, but at least you would be, if you do the Marjon Brooks deal, which I think would be my preference over anything longer than that. If you do that type of contract, at least it's for a 23-year-old with athletic gifts that, again, theoretically could develop into a pretty special player. If you are doing that for somebody like a Marjon Brooks, it feels like a waste. You're not investing in growth. They are essentially what they are. That's not necessarily the case with Bruno. So I would be more interested in doing it with Bruno than I would have been with Marjon or any other player like Marjon Brooks.
Yeah, I fall into the camp that it's a minimum contract, and you could probably, sure, you know, it's easily waivable if you need to, or they could sign him and then they could pair him with 2 second-round picks and trade him away next year. Either way, whatever they want to do, they could do just that. Again, Joe Monix, site manager of Grizzly Bear Blues, joining me like he does every week. Man, I appreciate it. We'll do it again next week. It'll be the last episode before the trade deadline, so hopefully it'll be a good one. And like you said, we may have a very different team to talk about this time next week. But again, I appreciate it, man.
Happy to do it, and I'll hopefully get you on GBB Live, our podcast here, in a week or two, and we can talk about the trade deadline and that sort of stuff as well. So I appreciate it, Mark. Continued success, my friend. I'll talk to you next week.
Absolutely, man. Talk to you then.
Thanks again to Joe Melnix for taking the time to join me tonight and talk with me. I know this it can be frustrating watching the Grizzlies. I know you probably hear that in our voices. It's frustrating sometimes to watch what they are doing on the court. But again, thanks to Joe Melnix for joining me and taking the time out of his night to talk with me as always. Make sure you stay tuned for tomorrow's show. Jason Smith of 92.9 and the Jason and John Show joining me tomorrow's show. It'll be a good one. If you want to be a feature sponsor in this show, email me at lockedongrizz@gmail.com. We're getting a bigger audience every single week. It's growing and growing, so make sure you email me if you want to be a part of this show. Make sure you go to iTunes and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. iTunes, Stitcher, doesn't matter. Just make sure you subscribe so that you get those downloads automatically every day to your phone or tablet or wherever you listen to. Or if you don't know where to go, just go to lockedongrizzlies.com.